Thank you, Paula. And thank you very much, Romilly and John, both for your presentations. They set a really good baseline for our conversation today. So we'll have a bit of a discussion with our two speakers, and then we'll open it up to audience Q&A. So if you have a question in mind, jot it down, and in a few minutes we'll have a chance to explore that as well. So Romilly, I'd be interested to know, first of all, given that a great deal of infrastructure investment is made by state agencies, whether it's health, education or transport, how does the interaction work between IA and the states?
So we do what's known as the infrastructure priority list every year. It's actually a live list, so projects come and go on the priority list. And this is our way of engaging with the jurisdictions. On the priority list are both initiatives and projects. So the projects are those that I've talked about when it's done a rigorous business case. It's something that's a project that's seeking over $100 million by the federal government. And so we will identify that and put that on the infrastructure priority list. Initiative is something different. It's where we look at a nationally significant infrastructure problem. So one would be remote housing overcrowding is one. Another one is EV charging stations and the lack of. Another one is energy reform. So we work with the states and jurisdictions, and we currently are in the throes now of seeking submissions from the states and territories on submissions for the IPL. Now, the reason the IPL is so crucially important is because if you consider the federal government budget this year, 75% of infrastructure projects linked and announced in this year's budget were directly from the infrastructure priority list. It's a pipeline list. It's a 15-year out list. So when you think about the governor of the Reserve Bank is currently talking about infrastructure investment, where do they go look? At the infrastructure priority list, which is why it's really important our engagement with the states and territories is continually ongoing, and we're having these conversations and we're making sure that we understand what's happening at a state level and we're capturing it in the IPL.
Right, so in order for that interaction to work well, what does a state I body like IWA need from IA?
Understanding. Well, we're looking forward to working. I mean, the state, in the last couple of years, the state has really, WA has stepped up a lot in terms of how it engages with Infrastructure Australia. And from what I can gather from the brief discussions we've had over the last 2 days, there's a high-level cooperation happening across the big projects which are occurring in the state at the moment. And there is a small pipeline of projects which are heading towards Infrastructure Australia, which the state is seeking to pursue. So that work is starting to flourish, which is really good. We will seek to develop that further, and particularly by the work I sought to explain in that presentation of working across the agencies and getting a comprehensive view as to what the infrastructure agenda should be, and assessing that, putting a bit of rigour into it, and developing our own shortlist. Now, that will allow us to then engage with Infrastructure Australia. We've talked already today about the need for us to have a close alignment in how we actually evaluate these projects, and we will be seeking to do that. So working off a common song sheet, as I might call it, is going to be critically important as well. There's not much point us rolling up a project to Infrastructure Australia and they say, well, terrific, but it's not meeting what we need to do. So if we can streamline that process through an understanding of the work Infrastructure Australia is looking at, we will certainly improve things. And then we will be part of the advocacy into Infrastructure Australia. I mean, this is a competitive game, if you like. If you think about it, we've got all of the states seeking to get a share of the Commonwealth money. So we've got to be very good at what we do. And we're going to seek to be very good at what we do with Infrastructure Australia.
I think what's really interesting for you to note is of the 125 projects on the IPL, 16 are from WA, but we know we have another 10 business cases from WA coming through. So our engagement with WA has really ramped up in the last couple of years, but specifically in the last 18 months.
So there's some exciting times ahead by the sound of it.
Busy times.
Yes,
yeah, lots of work, guys.
Yeah. So can I ask, John, just as a follow-on to that, some agencies have very well-established planning pipelines and infrastructure investment plans, others less so. How do you bring those up to a consistent quality level?
Through exposure, in the main. So simply identifying those agencies which are maybe just slightly off the heat in the quality of the work they're able to do, and then finding ways which we can assist them, finding ways which they can assist themselves in raising the bar. So what we're seeking to do through Infrastructure WA is to raise the bar in terms of how we go about thinking of infrastructure in this jurisdiction. Part of it will be around analysis. You are right, across the big bureaucracy of Western Australia, there are agencies who are doing a pretty good job, and there are agencies who probably are just slightly off that ball. So we will seek to work with them. We'll seek to show them what good standard is and hopefully raise their standard and provide assistance.
And then, Romilly, at the federal level, you're revising the audit, the updated plan will follow. What's the role now of IA in influencing public policy debate about bigger issues, whether it be climate change, for example, or future demographic challenges?
So the audit is a great opportunity for that, but just to come back to climate change with my former Green Building Council hat on, our Act is quite clear and it picks up that's an area that we need to consider. 2 years ago when we did a review of the assessment framework, which is the framework used for the business cases, climate change was included, and so the impacts of climate change have to be taken into account when business cases are being considered. And when you consider the audit, we talk about the key trends that we need to consider when it comes to infrastructure across Australia, and sustainability and climate change is one of them, adaptation and resilience. We do a lot of discussion around the fact that it's a risk when it comes to infrastructure and it's not being taken into consideration, but it's also an opportunity, and this is an opportunity where Australia can lead. We are very good at collaborating and sharing, and we can lead in this internationally.
Okay, and perhaps one final question before we go to the audience. Productivity enhancing infrastructure, what does that mean? What does it look like?
I think that, I should say that IA thinks it really is the community that you're in. It means different things to different communities and different people. It's really, I'll give you the one I, for those of you who know the Northern Beaches, sorry that this is echoing. If you look at the Northern Beaches, there's no way that you'll have a train or a light rail up to the Northern Beaches in Sydney. A productivity enhancing piece of infrastructure that they've put in is the B-Line, which is a rapid double-decker bus that started about 18 months ago, that has Wi-Fi and can charge your phone. All the car parks, you can only access it with your Opal card, and we also have Kia rides that do end of trip. When you get off the bus, you can get on a Kia ride, cost of a bus ticket, to get home. And that's an example. We all now catch it, no one drives, and I sit there and read and drive my staff nuts because I start sending emails at 6:30 in the morning. But that's an example of productivity enhancing infrastructure. But it's also when we look at social infrastructure as well, access to school, access to hospitals. The audit identifies, and we look at the time it takes to get to schools and hospitals via a car compared to the time it takes by public transport. And it's vastly different. And it really depends on where you live. So that's the type of things. It really depends on what you are looking at. But we look at productivity across all of it. And we also consider, as I said, cost, access and quality.
Great.
Sorry, I could talk about it for hours. I've read the whole audit, 637 pages.
Passionate about productivity enhancing infrastructure. It's fantastic. All right, I'll invite questions. When I ask you to present your question, can you please share your name and your organisation? Can you please make the question succinct? Let's avoid statements, and that allows more opportunity for others to ask questions as well. Sir.
Good afternoon, Nicholas Creed, partner at Allens. A question mainly for John. John, will Infrastructure WA have a role in advising government about the extent to which it's appropriate for the government to continue to own infrastructure and the extent to which the private sector should be involved in owning and financing infrastructure going forward?
You always ask the easy questions, Nicholas.
The funding
aspect of infrastructure will be an issue the government can ask us to look at as we go forward. In fact, our Act actually has a component of it that we will look at the funding question. So we will do that if the government asks us, and if that requires a consideration of asset management, we will look at it if we're asked to do that. But understanding what the government's policies are around the ownership of assets is critically important for an organisation like us. And as I said before, there's a fine balance between independence and influence. And for instance, I can't see much point where you know the government doesn't have a strong desire to see privatisations, to advocate privatisation. I don't see that as being a helpful process. So I probably wouldn't be volunteering that. But if government asks us on those matters, we will have a look.
And one of the great things about all the I-bodies is that Infrastructure WA has the opportunity to learn from all the other states and territories and also work. So we all get together very regularly. Like for Infrastructure Australia, the I-bodies are seen as our crucial stakeholder. And this is where IWA can say, if that's something that the government asks them to consider, they have all these other people, states, that they can say, was it effective in your state? What were the lessons learnt? And that's the richness of the fact that we all work really collaboratively together that IWA will have.
There's a question down the back.
Oh, good afternoon. Chris Outen, Kwinana Industries Council. Thank you for your presentations. This is a question about prioritisation of projects and sourcing new projects. And given the extreme dominance of public good infrastructure projects that have come out of the government sector for a very, very long time, how are you going to connect with organisations or individuals that have infrastructure projects that stack up but have a very, very small voice relative to those departmental priorities?
Anyone can make a submission to the infrastructure priority list. So anyone can get onto the Infrastructure Australia website and make a submission either as an initiative. We also have examples of RDAs putting together a business case for a project. So it really is open to all to have access. If it's a small community group and they seek support in putting an initiative forward, we would have that conversation with them. I think one of the things that's really important and what we've probably learnt over the 125 projects that we have on the list, it's very important that a community seeks to work with both local government and the state departments on projects that come up to the IPL, because if you want to highlight it as an issue and you're seeking federal government support, you also need to take a collaborative approach to ensure that you're working with all to try and get that up on the list. The other thing is the audit that I talked about is very deep. It is a proper audit. 150 contributors, 2,500 references in the audit. We will look at the audit and see if no jurisdictions put a initiative up on, it could be a social infrastructure issue, but we have identified it in the audit, we can do an IA initiative, which we have done before, like EVs we've put up.
And Chris, just from Infrastructure WA's perspective, we will be a conduit for organisations to make representations effectively to government about infrastructure projects, because that's what our remit is. But we will put those projects to a significant amount of scrutiny. And I think one of the opportunities I'm really looking forward to in Infrastructure WA is working with those communities who have proposals which may not necessarily have strong economic, direct economic benefit, but have indirect benefits, and working with them to seek to work out what those indirect benefits are. Externalities in our language, if you like, and try and get a better measure. So we will be a conduit. We will be there to hear those projects. We will put them to scrutiny, and they will have to stack up against other projects. And then when it comes to the prioritisation, that's going to take a fair amount of judgment in terms of how we represent those projects to government and so in our plan, in our strategic plan. Then that's one of the reasons why you're going to have a board. We're going to actually have a board who will make those judgments and make representations to government. Now, where then, that's our strategy. And then government will refine that down to a 10-year program. So I suppose part of my message to you is, for those people in the community who've got projects which haven't been getting up in the past, then have a hard look at your analytical base, because we will be putting that to scrutiny, and we'll seek to work with those proposals to see if they do stack up.
Rob Edel, KWM. Question for John. John, the last slide you put up at the end of your presentation was interesting, showing the level of private sector investment in infrastructure in WA. How do you see Infrastructure WA engaging with the private sector in relation to development of infrastructure? And as part of that, will the body have a role in advising government on the unsolicited bid process?
That chart was put up quite deliberately because I see the relationship between what the public sector does in infrastructure and what the private sector does as being just interwoven, particularly around the demand for resources as we look at developing infrastructure programs. But as I mentioned, I see the public infrastructure as having a whole range of high priorities in terms of the community benefit that infrastructure brings and how it supports private infrastructure. So it needs to be seen in that context. We're going to work with the private sector. We're going to reach out to the private sector to get an understanding as to where the major infrastructure spend is likely to be. Now, the private sector will obviously be guarded about that. There will be commercial issues which we'll need to be sensitive about. But we want to start a dialogue. We don't want to have a situation which happened back in that last boom again, where we as a public sector missed substantially the pressures that were coming out of the private sector. So we want to try and get order of magnitude understanding of what's happening in the private sector as we frame that public infrastructure program. In terms of the unsolicited bids, there's other processes which are overseeing the unsolicited bid exercise. I was asked this question the other day. To a large extent, I see unsolicited bids as primarily going to be developed by the private sector. And then their impact on the state's debt will be a case-by-case examination. In a number of cases, they probably won't impact. So our interest in those unsolicited bids will be like a private sector investment. So we will want to have an understanding of what's in the pipeline in that area, but it won't necessarily get into our specific 20-year strategy. It'll be part of the environment in which that strategy is framed.
Another question in the middle.
Nick Reynolds from GHD. And John, it's probably for you. What impact does the large state-owned infrastructure groups like Synergy and Western Power, how will they interact with WA infrastructure?
The same as the Department of Health or the Department of Education or any of the other agencies of the state. We'll be seeking to work with them because they have a critical role in infrastructure development in the state. They have a critical impact on state finances and on service delivery. So having a clear understanding about what the infrastructure program of the larger trading enterprises in the state will be essential, and we'll seek to work with all of the trading enterprises in pulling together the plan. They'll be large in what we do, so they're essential for us to understand what they're up to and what their planning is. And in some of these areas, particularly the big sectors, energy, water, transport, over a 20-year plan, what they have in mind is critically important for our strategy. So working with the with these entities across that 20 years is going to be critically important. It'll frame what we do. So it'll be a close relationship.
Can I ask a question about independence? The remit of IA, the remit of IWA is enshrined in legislation. The boards are appointed by the government of the day. How do you maintain the right level of independence in that kind of environment?
It's really important you find a good balance between independence and influence. You can be too independent and then you lose the credibility when it comes to influence. And so part of that is working collaboratively, but ensuring that your processes are rigorous, accountable and transparent. So, we always talk about rigorous business cases, but at the same time, we have to work collaboratively with the states and territories. So it is a balance, is the way I would describe it, because you want the I bodies to also push for reform as well. Mm. So you've kind of got this balance of being really independent, but then trying to be influential.
Yeah, look, as I mentioned in the prepared comments, it's one of the reasons why government appoint people like us to these roles, because we've had enough experience to understand what that balance is and how to work it. I mean, and a lot of us have reputation on the line here. So, personally, my reputation is to be seen to be producing a 20-year strategy, which the community would say that's a pretty fair piece of work. Mm-hmm. That's where the independence is. The influence is listening into your environment about, so what is the political agenda? And how does that 20-year strategy align with that political agenda? And as Romilly just said, there's not much point being at 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. There's not much point. So you've got to find the balance. Mm-hmm.
Do we have another question? It's a very quiet room, isn't it? Is it the dessert? There's a microphone on its way.
Yeah, thank you. Just Robert Gray from RCF. Quick question around telecommunications. People haven't mentioned telecommunications as a infrastructure, item to date. Here in Australia, have we taken our eye off the ball? And is the delivery of a data connection to your household, your city, your community, part of what the iBody should be looking at?
We are. So that's a lovely segue into the audit. We have a whole section on telecommunications. We talk about the digital disadvantaged. We identify the issue of the NBN and some of the challenges that have happened around the NBN. Telecommunications is incredibly important and it's an opportunity, but it's also a challenge, and there's a whole lot of areas that we've identified when it comes to telecommunications that need to be considered, and that's the role of IA, is highlighting what those challenges are, and hopefully push for reform. So we do that. Dina Schiff, who's on our board, is our telecommunications expert. She's ex-Telstra and KWM. It's very much on our agenda.
The digital, just to sort of extend that, the whole question of digital development and digital infrastructure and where that's going to track is clearly going to be on our agenda, because to not regard that and to not scrutinise it and look at what other jurisdictions are doing wouldn't be in the interests of this jurisdiction. So we will certainly be doing that. It's going to be, who knows how significant that's going to be in the years ahead, but already it's emerging at a pretty fair pace.
But it comes back to, how it talked about access, quality and cost. The access to good telecommunications is very important for certain remote and regional Australians to have access to education, healthcare, because they could use telehealth. There's all these opportunities that we need to ensure are available for them so they also have access. We have enormous access when it comes to the cities and areas, but that there's areas in remote and regional Australia who don't have access. they are automatically at a disadvantage, and that comes back to the productivity question that Richard raised. And so we have this divide, and there is a real opportunity for us on the telecommunications to think differently on that.
Oh, I mean, I think everyone in the room would have a different experience, and it's not just rural communities, even inner cities, people will have a different experience in terms of their speed and, you know, their interaction with the various bodies that would provide a data connection, you know, through to the internet. A quick follow-up question. Is there anything, John, you know, from a state perspective, recognizing this rolls up to national pretty quickly, but is there something, you know, in the local area or in the state, I guess, arena that we could be doing something differently with respect to higher speed, better service, better connection in inner cities as well as rural communities?
Look, I think this does get to a federal matter and the national agenda. If there are, I'm sure the agencies will bring it to our attention. The regional communities and the regional economies who we have vast numbers of in Western Australia, pick Romilly's point, the way we communicate and relate to those communities is critically important. I mean, the state has a responsibility for that as much as the Commonwealth does. Telecommunications, Commonwealth issue, if there are state matters, if there are people in the room with state matters in this area, let's hear them. But I don't have anything which I could probably add to your query.
Yeah, hi, John and Romilly. A lot of the discussion around infrastructure focuses on, Mark Beyer from Business News. A lot of the discussion focuses on, you know, big projects, big ticket items. I'm wondering to what extent your role will push down to a smaller local level. And I've got a personal interest here. There's an ongoing issue about availability of community sporting facilities as new suburbs develop around Perth. That's just one example of something that, you know, at a very small local level often doesn't get introduced to discussions about big infrastructure priorities. Could you give us any insight as to what level you'll push down for that?
The audit clearly raises under our social infrastructure section. We have blue and green infrastructure, which we identify, and we talk about the importance of green space and sporting spaces in community. Where you have, and we also identify the challenges of where you have new housing developments and you might put in transport infrastructure and you miss out on the sporting infrastructure. And it's crucially important for so many different reasons. Livability, the, you know, healthy, you know, interaction with our kids and families, how communities engage. And so we identify a whole lot of areas around both green and blue infrastructure that it's really important. So we identify the challenges and we also identify the opportunities. And the reason the audit is so important is we're then going to seek to have engagement with everybody on what are the options and what are the solutions to this. But I'm a very huge supporter, coming from a sporting background and have soccer mad kids, of the importance that everyone, all communities, should have equal access to sporting facilities. Another one, the reason we say blue, swimming pools are just as important. So if you think of certain remote and regional communities, a swimming pool is just as important as an oval. And it's something that we pick up in the audit.
Mark, just from an Infrastructure WA perspective, I've been waiting for the question of scope, you know, and I think your question goes to scope, about how broad a scope are we going to take in this space, and it's a question which will evolve. I've mentioned earlier that anything that impacts state debt, we will look hard at. When you get to local government, my expectation is there will be a number of local government projects which have got a component of state funding in them, which will come to our, across our remit. And also, in terms of the strategy, the 20-year strategy and the 10-year program, there's no limit, there's no minimum number on that. That's everything. That's the whole infrastructure program of the public sector of Western Australia, probably including local government, including Commonwealth agencies as well. So our scope could well reach into your space. But it's not probably going to deal with local government infrastructure spend, which is financed by local government. I think in terms of scope, we'd probably be drawing a line on that because there's only so much you can do.
Do you have a question down this way?
David Harrison from Murdoch University. A nice segue, John. Thank you, as my question goes to scope. Interested in your thoughts on regulation and regulatory barriers to infrastructure development and whether that's something that will come into your purview with IWA.
The Act actually asks us to call out policy issues or regulatory matters which might be impinging on the efficient and effective delivery of infrastructure. So, yes, it will. We're required to by the Act, so we will look at that. When you look at it, that's a very big area, policy and regulatory activity. And again, in terms of regulatory activity, some of this is state and some of it's national, and there's a lot of overlap. So we will need to be sensitive to that.
Do you have another question in the same direction?
Yes, thanks. John Syme from Syme Marmion. Just to follow on the question of scope, with this rather more organised looking at infrastructure in WA, to what extent do you think this will impact on long-term land use planning, and what interaction will that have, and how that might that be influenced by this rather more organised look at infrastructure planning?
Well, long-term land use planning, I think, will be very much part of what we talk about in a 20-year strategy, because a lot of infrastructure development is going to depend on where we develop it and what corridors, for instance, are going to be required to ensure the infrastructure can be serviced, or even provision being made for the development of infrastructure into the future which won't be built immediately. So land use planning will certainly be part of it. We've got we've got the head of the Department of Planning on our board, and we've got a strong intention to work very closely with the Planning Commission as we develop the 20-year strategy. So it's an area which will be relevant to how we bring together this 20-year plan.
And Infrastructure Australia put a report out last year called Planning Livable Cities, and very much focuses on place. And so it is on our, it's one of our reform agenda pieces of work that we released.
Can I ask a question about capability as we look at the audit, as we look at the plan and the way it is likely to unfold? Where are our gaps? Where are our skill gaps?
You couldn't miss that infrastructure is a very, it is the sector for highest focus at the moment in Australia, and that also has its challenges. We have both the mega projects and then just normal infrastructure projects. We have the highest population growth of any OECD country. In some areas there's a catch up on infrastructure, and part of the issues we have is sequencing. So you have these big projects happening all over Australia all at the same time, and we just don't have the skills. So both at a public sector level and a private sector level, one area is project managers at a high level on these mega projects. So what's happening is in some jurisdictions, they are forcing, when they're putting out the projects, to say you have to do a JV with an international group to try and bring that skill knowledge into Australia. I know Victoria is doing that. Another thing Victoria is doing is a Skills Leadership Academy, and New South Wales is sending people down to Victoria to the Skills Leadership Academy. Victoria, again, are also doing, have put a percentage on all major infrastructure projects on the number of trainees that are on the project, and because skills has been identified as one of the challenges that we're dealing with, and it is across Australia. What I can say is the Department of Infrastructure, Transport, Cities and Regional Development, which is our federal department, is actually creating a working group on skills. It realises that with the focus on infrastructure at the moment, it really needs to take that seriously, and what can be unlocked around skills, how can they help? So it's a very big issue, and I know the SILF, which is the Construction Industry Leadership Forum that New South Wales and Victoria are running, it's a big area they're focusing on too.
Well, with the lived experience of the last decade in Western Australia, the need for skills oscillates with our infrastructure program. That's why that last chart was so significant. Mm-hmm. One of the things we have to be better at is trying to pick the cycle. I'll never say I can pick the turning point, but you try and pick the cycle in infrastructure because it impacts on skill. And if we don't call that right, then the cost of delivering the infrastructure and therefore the net benefits of infrastructure get eaten away. So that's one of the reasons why this broader look than just looking at what the public sector is doing in terms of the build is what the private sector is about as well. Mm-hmm. And then trying to put some forward indicators into that to say skill shortages, labour shortages may well be issues which will bear on future infrastructure programs and try and get that discussion happening across the community. I mean, we missed that in that last boom. Mm-hmm. In WA, we missed it, and we missed it badly. We've got to do better than that.
And the skills is going to be an ongoing issue. The infrastructure spend is not going to slow down. Mm-hmm. Like, the federal government have made a $100 billion commitment over the next 10 years. That we have to be aware of it and do something about it collectively.
Mm-hmm. We have time for one last question, which is down the back.
Hi, Owen Thomas from the Public Transport Authority. I just wondered whether you had any sort of insight whether IA or IWA will play a bit more of a role in helping to assess how the traditional ways of assessing some of the social infrastructure projects, so public transport for an example, are maybe not it's not advantageous through traditional methods like cost-benefit assessment and maybe isn't picking up the wider benefits that those sorts of investments make, which can then make it hard to get some of those projects to stack up when compared to some of the more traditional means.
So legislatively, Infrastructure Australia has to review its assessment framework every 2 years, and we're currently in the process of doing that right now. And the point that you have raised is very much on the agenda of Infrastructure Australia. We have very frank feedback from all the jurisdictions on how we look at our assessment framework methodology. So A, we're doing that. The second thing we're doing, and I've been talking to people like Darren and other DGs in WA, is we are creating an independent advisory group between our assessment framework and the board to ensure that we're looking at beyond the economics, so the social and the environmental and others, and that we're getting that independent advice. So even though our board's independent, we will ensure that we have more of a jurisdictional lens on that. The final thing we're doing is a customer user experience. So we get feedback on business cases and pulling business cases together. And I think when we do that with the jurisdictions, we will get some feedback back about the point that you've raised around the balance between economic, social and environmental and other areas, and that will come back through. And then when we've collated all that information, we'll be working with the federal government department to look at some harmonisation across all jurisdictions.
And look, from an IWA perspective, it goes to Chris's comment or question earlier on. Working up the assessment of costs and benefits, particularly in projects which are less economic and more social or environmental, is going to be an area which we will, I think, actively get involved with, because you look across the state, one of the real challenges, particularly for regional communities, is how do you get over that cost-benefit threshold, particularly when the economic benefit may not be as obvious as it will be in larger population areas. So, and we have to provide good ears and accommodation to infrastructure projects across the state. So those regional projects, we have to find a way of assessing those regional projects and bringing their cost-benefit analysis up to a point where projects, you know, can actually meet the hurdle rates. So it's going to be this area is
It's evolving.
It's evolving, but in economics, it's been with us for ages. Mm. And in many areas in public policy, you know, now we've still got a lot of work to do.
But this is where the strength of having all the I-bodies. Mm. If you remember when IA was created in 2008, there weren't any I-bodies. So we were kind of on our, you know, just creating it as they went. The strength of the I-bodies is we're getting all this information coming through, because they all do the business cases at a state level, and that feedback's feeding back in through Infrastructure Australia.
So thank you for your questions. Can I invite Paula back to the stage?